Hi, everybody. Welcome to Moco's Most Famous. I'm Joe Yashroff, Director of Content and Operations here at MyMC Media. We are coming to you from our podcast studio in Rockville, Maryland, as usual, in the heart of Montgomery County. Very excited about today's guest. I'm always excited about the guests, but I'm really excited today. We have country music artist Maggie Rose, born and bred in Potomac, now living in Nashville, because that's what country singers do. Maggie, how are you?
I'm good, Joe. How are you?
I'm doing well. Where are you? I know you're in the middle of a tour. Where are you right now?
I'm calling you from New York City. We just had a press day yesterday, and we are about to load into our buzz bus and head up to the Mohegan Sun for our next couple of dates with Kelly Clarkson.
That is awesome, and we're going to talk about that. But when you say tour bus, the first thing that comes to my mind is one of my favorite movies of all time, Almost Famous, one of my favorite scenes. So is riding on a tour bus like that in the movie?
Yes, our bus is a little bit smaller than that one. And, you know, I've been on the Prevost before where we have bunks and kitchens and everything.
Uh-huh.
Our bus is not that. We call it the Holy Roller because my backing band, Them Vibes, actually bought this church bus from the Women's Jewish Community Center.
Nice.
So we get there in style, and we got a little help from above to get us there safely, I guess.
A little help from your friends, as the song goes. Very nice.
Exactly.
So, all right, so you're now on the midst of a tour that started in Florida last month. You had been to Mexico, and then you mentioned Kelly Clarkson. You just did a show in Allentown, PA with Kelly Clarkson. What was that experience like?
It was awesome. It was our first date on the Meaning of Life tour with Kelly, although I had played a show with her over the summer in Montana, and I've just become a little familiar with her because we're managed by the same company.
Mm-hmm.
And first of all, just to speak to Kelly, she's exactly who she presents herself to be, and she's totally unaffected and gracious and welcoming, but she's just a massive talent, and she sounds on stage live as she does in her recordings. She invited me to sing with her on her encore song, and
wow.
I'm her direct support on the dates that we're on, but she also has another opener before us who won last season of The Voice, and she's a 15-year-old artist named Bryn Cartelli, who totally blew my mind that she was even 15 because she's mature beyond her years. But that's an example of how Kelly sets the tone for this tour by having Bryn and I finish the night with her, and we all sing Miss Independent, and I had my first riser experience where we descended into the stage.
Oh,
it was
wow.
pretty awesome. So yeah, it's big time, and she's got a great crew, and these are awesome arenas and just a different mindset after having been on this headlining tour. We've been on Change the Whole Thing tour pretty much since the album came out. You just remind yourself that it's an opportunity to expose your music to people who've never heard of you before, and she's giving us that chance.
That's amazing. You know, you've got your own tour, as you talked about, which is a big deal. But then you're also with Kelly Clarkson, one of the big stars in country music and music period. She's also now become a TV star on The Voice. And it's so good to hear that, you know, sometimes it's not the case where someone who presents themselves in a certain way that they're like that behind the scenes. But it's great to hear that she is like that behind the scenes as well. What have you learned from Kelly Clarkson, or what inspiration have you derived from knowing her, from working with her?
I mean, I think it's a lot about her personality. Once again, just remembering that when I have artists who are opening for me, to try and extend that same courtesy that she's done for me and for Bryn. I know people who have much less reason to be narcissistic who are, and it permeates throughout the entire evening, and it makes everyone play differently on stage. And I think the community aspect of it is what propels us and keeps us on the road and away from our homes for so long, is that you have to take care of the people that you're with and the people that you're performing for. And also her professionalism. When we played the show in Montana, I was talking to her before, and she was super sick and could barely speak and was raspy. And instead of having a bad attitude about it, I think she's just very human and accepts that element of what she does. Like, we're going to have days where we're sick, and we're going to have days where we aren't in the mood to perform. But it was like all that went away once she got on stage, and she brought the audience into her struggle a little bit, but then dropped it and had a great time. So it's cool to see someone who's that resilient and has such a bar to meet, yet is accepting of what they have to offer.
Take us back to that moment in the encore. And I know you've sung with her. You're an established country artist in your own right. But when you're on stage with a Kelly Clarkson, what is that dynamic like? Are you able to, at the time, say, wow, this is pretty cool? Or do you think about that stuff maybe before and after?
When she asked us for the first time to join her and do that, I think I had gotten all my nerves out just in anticipation for it. But then once it was actually happening, I think I had like an oh crap moment. This is ridiculous. And I hadn't ever really sung with her in that capacity too. And I didn't want to admit this to her, but a couple months ago, Nashville does a fundraiser every quarter where they have a bunch of artists do cover songs to one theme. And there was a 2000s night and I sang Miss Independent for my song. Mm-hmm. So I already knew the song very well and was ready to give my best performance with her.
That's great.
So it was a surreal thing. And I can't say that I'll soon feel that way about anything in the near future. If I do, I'm very lucky.
That's great. So you've got two shows coming up in Connecticut, as you mentioned, at the Mohegan Sun, tomorrow, Thursday, and then Friday with Kelly Clarkson. And then you come home to D.C. for a show Saturday at the U Street Music Hall, and then 5 days later at the Baltimore Soundstage. So that's, I know you love always coming back home and to play in front of some of your family and friends.
Absolutely. It's always nice, especially U Street will be particularly cool because it's sort of like the little encore show after a great run mm-hmm. of these arena shows. And it'll be my older sister's birthday the following day. I'm also, while I'm home, getting to attend one of my best friend's wedding showers the next day. So whenever I come home, I try and make sure to get the family time I need and maintain relationships with people who've been at my side for so long.
That's great. I know
the community is still so strong there.
Absolutely. And I know you have a big family. You have a very supportive family. You have a ton of friends, a lot of supportive friends. So that's got to be nice to have this support unit always there for you to support.
Yeah, they're unfaltering. And I don't take it for granted. The longer that I do this, that I realize how rare that is. And getting to know more about my peers and what their support system consists of, I just see by comparison how lucky I am that from the get-go, when I knew nothing about what I was going to do, mm-hmm. they just let me pursue this.
So back to the shows back in D.C. and in Baltimore, what can your fans expect in terms of, I'm sure, music from your Change the Whole Thing album? What else can they expect?
Well, we have Them Vibes joining us, so they basically are my entire backing band. I've just absorbed their other guitar player who's touring with them when Larry and Alex aren't with me, mm-hmm. and I've just taken everyone in their band out on the road. So with that, they'll get to do a really great opening set of their own, and I love their music, but we bring that family energy to the stage during my set, and a ton of background vocals. And, you know, there's something that has changed with my narrative, especially in the last couple of years, where we aren't really country anymore. And I feel like people have followed us willingly. We've retained the people who were fans, but we've broken into this new audience that I've never been exposed to before, where we're getting to play shows with Bob Weir from Grateful Dead. And I just announced a show yesterday where we're on the bill with Hall & Oates and Robert Plant and Cecil, where they're booking the Foo Fighters. And it's just cool to see our music living in areas that it's never lived in before. And that comes across with our new sound. It's a little more funky and soulful and rootsy, but it's still all byproduct of my time spent in Nashville.
Mm-hmm.
Now that, so I think it's very much Nashville music.
Take us through kind of the decision to change the music choices.
I think it was not a conscious decision about changing. It was just what I was creating was evolving into a different place. And I think the challenge was, or the catalyst was really when I decided to challenge myself to bridge the gap between what people were hearing in a live setting and what they were hearing on the recorded music. And if I really examined it and was honest with myself, everything that I had released subsequent to Change the Whole Thing, I had done in a really manicured way. I had done it the Nashville way.
Mm-hmm.
And I was also trying to write singles for country radio as opposed to getting to just write a cohesive album top to bottom. It was more about each song being a viable radio single, and that's just not an inspiring place to be. And I burnt out on that. And I burnt out on the politics of country music, and I certainly didn't burn out on the lyrical depth of what my favorite country songs have and mm-hmm. that organic element. And I tried to keep those things, but bring all of this new music to a live setting and not over comp vocals and use auto-tune. And in fact, what you hear on Change the Whole Thing, we decided to abide by this rule, was just keep every song start to finish one take. And that meant a lot of rehearsal beforehand.
Mm-hmm.
And a little compromised, but also everyone trying to deliver their absolute best performance every time the tape started rolling.
You've been described by some as a powerhouse vocalist. I would agree with that. You have a very big, strong voice. Do you feel like you're a better singer now than you were 5 years ago?
Absolutely. And not just in a technical sense. I think there is some of that because you just inherently get better if you're practicing daily, which we do, but also just in the intention behind what's being sung and why. It's more about the performance. And I think growing up from a very early age, I was always a singer, but even more than 5 years ago now, I feel like I'm more of a performer.
Mm-hmm. You mentioned growing up, which is a great segue into my next set of questions about growing up in Montgomery County. The show's called MoCo's Most Famous. You grew up in Montgomery County. Take us back. What was it like growing up here and kind of learning to love music and then eventually becoming a singer, professional singer?
Yes, it's not the conventional career path of a lot of people who come out of Montgomery County, but it was just such a privilege to grow up there. It's a wonderful, beautiful community. You know, I loved all my school years and my friends. I'm still best friends with people that I went to kindergarten with. So I had the ability to just really enjoy my childhood and be poetic, and I wasn't distracted by other things. So I think I just really enjoyed life, and that appreciation for life and being here and performing has seeped into my music. And my parents, although no one in my family is really musical, they appreciate music very much. And that gave me just free rein to sing wherever all the time. And as you know, they drove me up and down the East Coast to join the B Street Band when I was a teenager, because up until then I had really just had my only exposure singing at Our Lady of Mercy in choir or the Christmas pageant or wherever my parents were having a dinner party and I decided to sing a couple songs. So they gave me that opportunity to perform in a bar setting with a Bruce Springsteen cover band. And the fact that they trusted me with that empowered me also. So it was a wonderful upbringing. And I think it just made me a person who loves music and art and sharing that with people.
You mentioned the Bruce Springsteen cover band, the B Street Band, playing off of E Street Band, obviously. Have you ever had a chance to sing with Bruce, meet him, thank him, or not necessarily thank him, but to talk to him at all?
No, I haven't. And I would.
That needs to happen.
It needs to happen. And I am such a Bruce fan. I'm actually going to Asbury Park, which is
his
stomping grounds, next week, if I'm correct. I'm sorry. I'm kind of busy. I'm forgetting where I'm supposed to be going some days.
March 22nd. Yeah, next week.
Thank you, Joe. I appreciate my tour manager. and I'm going to try and hook up with the B Street Band or Willie Forte and see if they won't join me. Maybe I'll share this podcast with them, and that will grease the wheel, get them on stage.
Might be the place to be. March 22nd, Asbury Park, New Jersey, at the Wonder Bar for all those Maggie and Bruce Springsteen fans out there. One of my favorite stories from your growing up is when you first sang, you didn't do it traditionally. Most people, when they sing, they stand up and they look at the crowd and they sing. You didn't do it quite like that. Can you share that story?
Yeah, you're going to help me.
Hopefully it's not embarrassing, but I think it's a very cute story. It's a cute story.
It's cute now that I realize how hard it is to actually get people to pay attention to what you're doing.
Right.
But when I was really young and before I got the maybe stage presence, I guess, that I do now, I would make people actually turn around and I would sing to them as a kid, whatever Disney song of the day was my favorite. And, you know, people obliged and they did it and it was very sweet of them, but eventually I dropped that and I let them look at me while I was performing. That was probably like age 10 when I broke that habit.
So just making clear, when people go see you at shows, they do not have to turn around now, correct?
Yes. Thank you for specifying that. I do not think that would be a good selling point. Yes.
I don't think so. It would be different. It would definitely be
the
different.
The only person who can really get away with that, I think, is Sia. And she still faces the audience. She covers her face.
That's a great point. Great point. All right. So we are going
to... She's trademarked that already.
She has. So we're going to take a quick break. We've got a lot more to talk about with Potomac, Maryland's own Maggie Rose. That'll happen right after this message. This is MoCo's Most Famous, brought to you by MC Media.
Yeah. MCM, your community media center, is making Montgomery County a great place to live through programs like 21 This Week. Montgomery County's hardest-hitting political talk show keeps you up to date with the local political scene. Montgomery Community Media. Our middle name is Community.
Welcome back. We are talking to country singer, songwriter, producer. I'm guessing you're probably an actress too, or if not now, later, because singers seem to make good actors and actresses. Maggie Rose on MoCo's Most Famous, brought to you by MyMC Media. So let me ask you, any aspirations? Can you act? Will we be seeing you on TV or in the movies down the road?
I get asked to do voiceover stuff here and there, which is nice because you can do that remotely and it doesn't disrupt touring. Mm-hmm. I love the idea of acting just because I think you do need to apply that to what you're bringing to the stage every night and mm-hmm. take people through the range of emotions. And I have an acting coach in Nashville that I see, but that was actually for stage performing more than film acting. Mm-hmm. But it's certainly something that I think is cool and it could be a wonderful brand extension. And my agency, CAA, is always sending me little challenges to take if I'm interested. And who knows? I would never say no to anything.
That's a great attitude to have. And I think you would make a very good actress. And again, some of the songs that you write and sing, you are acting as you're telling the story. That's what it is. It's acting and telling the story. So I don't think it's that far-fetched. And by the way, Maggie, I'm an expert in country music, and I'll tell you why. Because I watched the first two seasons of Nashville on ABC, and I saw A Star Is Born, so that makes me an expert, right?
That's all you need to know.
Exactly.
That's the prerequisite for it all.
Speaking of which, how real it, to me, watching Nashville, it's obviously a dramatized version of reality, but to me it seemed pretty real. How close is it to reality, in your opinion?
I have to admit, I never watched it.
Wow.
Because I felt like it would upset me. I was like, I already just did an entire day of this, but
you don't need to watch
it
live
on TV.
Why would
I go watch it? But okay. Like the people who do the music on it, like T-Bone Burnett, and I've met all of the cast. They are so hardworking, and they're all really talented. We early on, they had an episode at the Opry where they filmed for the television show the same night as I was performing. Mm-hmm. And I was very impressed to see that they were performing in front of the same audience that I was and having to do the song a couple times over and over again. So I think that they're living the real thing just themselves, people who are on the cast.
Sure.
And a lot of songwriters have gotten great opportunities from that show just because there's a demand for syncs and placements. And I've become friendly with Chip Esten, who's actually, I think, from Maryland.
I think
well,
he is. I think
or
you're
his
right.
wife is. I always run into him at the airport when I'm going to DCA.
That's cool.
So if you guys like Chip Esten, just hang out at DCA. he'll love notes. That I said that.
I'm sure he will. I'm sure he will. All right, so I want to talk.
I love what it's done for us.
Say that again?
I love what it's done for our town in bringing film houses there. And I remember when Raina died and I didn't even watch a show and I was really sad.
Wow.
Spoiler alert.
Exactly. That was about 5 years ago, but that was very sad.
Mm-hmm.
All right, so a couple more Nashville questions. You've lived there now for what, close to 10 years?
Actually, I just hit my 11-year mark in January.
How about that?
Mm-hmm.
So
hardcore.
Yeah, it is. So, but you're still a Marylander, right, who just lives in Nashville or not?
I think I'm always going to have to say my home is, like, I'm a Maryland girl.
Right.
My home physically is in Nashville, but you know, I will probably start to get a little stir crazy if I don't pay Montgomery County a visit every couple months. I have a time limit. It's just internal. It goes off at a certain point, and it's time to go visit home.
Well, it's always good when you come back, especially when you do shows that we can all go see at Bethesda Jazz and Blues and all the other places that you play around here. All right, so I want to ask you about the Grand Ole Opry. So people who don't know a lot about country music, they've heard of the Grand Ole Opry. There's a little I don't know if it's a misnomer. Is it a place, or is it a thing, or is it both?
I think it's an institution.
Mm-hmm.
And the reason I say that is because in the time that I've lived in Nashville, the Opry was completely flooded in 2010. So they had to move it to the Ryman Auditorium. And in years past, it's moved from Hillsborough Village to East Nashville, where I live, and then to the Ryman, and then to the big Grand Ole Opry House, which is a little outside Nashville.
Right.
So the physical place has changed over the years, but it's been the longest running live radio show ever. And, you know, people fill up the seats every night, no matter where it is. And during the Christmas months, it also moves to the Ryman, just to bring back tradition.
And the Ryman you
mentioned. I think it's an institution. Mm-hmm.
Okay. The Ryman you mentioned, the Ryman Auditorium, I think it's called the Mother Church of Country Music, correct?
You got it.
I've been there once, just went through for just a few minutes. Somebody was playing for a few minutes, and it's just one of the coolest. It's probably the coolest venue I've ever been to, because you really feel like you're in a church and there's a show going on. It's small, it's intimate. Everyone is basically, you know, either it feels like everybody's in the third row or hanging over you. Is that one of your top venues that you've played and been to?
Absolutely. I think the first time I ever played on that stage was for a Holiday Opry show.
Mm-hmm.
And I had the sound check. I remember they didn't even have my mic turned on. I just started singing, and I could hear it reverberating off the walls. It's just acoustically one of the best buildings you can sing or play in. And it's been around so long. I don't know how it hasn't burned down, because back in the day, they all sit on those lacquered wooden pews, and people would just be smoking cigarettes and, like you said, hanging on top of each other. And
so cool.
It's just, you can feel, I swear there's a ghost in there when you play on stage.
Absolutely.
And musicians even make jokes when things go wrong. Not terribly wrong, but when people make mistakes or there's a flub, they're like, it's the ghost of the Ryman messing with us.
That's funny. All right, so we have another couple minutes, and I know you got to get going on a bus so you can make it to your show, and you have to save your voice too. So you have a really good manager, and he also happens to be your husband. What is the dynamic? Austin Marshall, we're talking about. How is that dynamic work for you both?
Yeah, I think it's a gift most of the time, because music is an extremely intimate thing, but then I get to share it with someone who's super knowledgeable about music and has expanded my musical vocabulary tenfold since we started dating, is a drummer himself. He's just passionate, as I am, about what we're doing. So I get to share in something that brings us both so much joy and feel like I have him such a part of it. And it makes us have skin in the game. It makes us work harder for one another. But we also need to remember that we're husband and wife, and that there's a time for just being each other's friend, and that, you know, we can get into slippery situations without even realizing it. I bring up one thing as we're about to fall asleep, and then we end up having essentially an hour-long business meeting, right, as we're supposed to be getting rest.
Right.
And it just sort of limits that clarity on when you are a certain thing to the other person.
Right.
That being said, even if we weren't married, I think he would be the best manager that I could work with. And he co-manages me with this guy named Marvel Blackstock.
Mm-hmm.
He's a total badass and owns Starstruck Management and also the studio where I recorded Change the Whole Thing. Oh. And Narvel was married to Reba McEntire for...
I've heard of her.
...over two decades. His son, Brandon, is married to Kelly Clarkson and manages her.
What?
Right. So Narvel understands this whole dynamic of two people who have a good work ethic and are in love with each other working together. And I think that his unique perspective on that made him really appreciate the partnership that Austin and I have.
Mm-hmm. And the one thing you didn't mention about Austin, and I think he'd be disappointed that you didn't, is he does a really mean Joe Cocker impression.
He does a mean Joe Cocker. He's also got a great Sinatra performance. He's a very versatile guy. He has different voices. He's an excellent singer, but I'm wondering, when he's not emulating someone else, what he really sounds like.
That's a good question. You'll have to
he's
ask him.
He's also in a country cover band called Dickie Doo and the Don'ts, a 90s cover band. Yeah, he's a busy guy.
How does he have time? All right, so you mentioned the versatility. You're very versatile. Besides being a great singer, powerhouse vocalist, as we talked about, you're an accomplished writer. You've written a ton of songs the last few years, written or co-written. You're also a producer. You also play guitar and I'm sure many other instruments. Have you always been sort of, in baseball, we would call it a five-tool player, or has this kind of developed over the years?
I think I've always been a five-tool player.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not a great guitar player, but I picked it up so that I could learn, or that I could be self-sufficient and write my own music. And if ever I was in a situation where someone said, play me a song, I wanted to be able to do that on my own. And of course, that's evolved to a place where it's part of our show and I've gotten better at it. But I think it's just the attitude of just do it, pick it up and see if you can pull it off. And that serves me well sometimes. And then when it doesn't, you don't know about it because I don't do it in front of people.
I got you.
But it's being an independent artist, I think. Mm-hmm. Has really bred that attitude of you got to make it happen. And the production really came from that situation as well. Like, no one's telling me to make a record. I'm not under the gun by some label to meet a deadline. So go make music. And these are the tools you have in your arsenal. I can probably convey what I want to in a production sense. And it ended up working out. And success begets success, and then makes you a little more daring to try something else.
Well said. All right, this next topic will take 2 hours. We don't have 2 hours. We have about a minute. Women in radio, you kind of touched on it. In a nutshell, correct me if I'm wrong, women's songs do not get played as much as men's songs. It's not even close, and this is a Nashville thing, a country music thing.
We're going to have to take more than a minute on this.
Okay, well, how have you dealt with that personally? I know that it's near and dear to your heart.
It's near and dear to my heart, even now, still, when I'm not even in that, mm-hmm. I'm not even in that arena. We're releasing all of our music to AAA rock stations. I'm now in the rock department at CAA, and we're considered a root act. Mm-hmm. When we're being billed on these different shows.
Okay.
But I still can't look away from, I can't not watch the progress or lack of. It's getting worse. Mm-hmm. The year-end chart for 2018 of all the songs, top 100, the first solo female act is Maren Morris in the 30s. And I think BB Rexha was the woman in the top 10. She's a hard, true pop artist who's featured with FGL. Mm-hmm. And it wasn't even her song. And that was the first woman's name you see in the top 10. So it's not a question of if it's a problem. It's incontrovertibly a problem with radio. The good news is radio is no longer synonymous with country music. Mm-hmm. You're seeing artists like Margot Price and Kacey Musgraves winning album of the year,
right,
all across all genres. And people are starting to define what music in general means to them and their favorite music, because we have all these mediums to go curate our own playlists. If that's through Spotify, which is in a little hot water because they're not helping out songwriters as much by honoring the Music Modernization Act, but mm-hmm. there's Apple Music and there's iTunes and there's going to live shows and just seeking that out without having a list curated for you by a bunch of program directors who are afraid to shake it up. And I could have never said that before because I was beholden to them,
right,
for so long.
Well, it's an unfortunate problem, and hopefully, like so many other things that are happening now and changes are coming, hopefully that will hit country music in the next year or two. We'll definitely see. Maggie, cannot thank
you. I think you're
seeing
really talented artists finding other outlets. And I think the anger has now changed into action because people have now accepted, okay, this really sucks and this is the reality. But now you're just seeing these people emerging in other platforms and succeeding.
Is that why?
Which feels good.
Okay.
And fun to watch.
Is that why, or is that part of why Taylor Swift kind of left country music to become a pop artist?
I think so. It's part of the reason that I left. I think Taylor Swift probably just saw the opportunity that the world was hers for the taking.
Right.
So that has something to do with it as well. And she made a really good pop record.
Mm-hmm.
I think that I associate her music with that now because she sustained it for so long.
Right.
And it was great that she had country music as her jumping off point. But I think that every artist needs to sort of wiggle around a little bit to find out where they're going to settle.
Got it. Maggie, best of luck to you. The next couple shows at Mohegan Sun in Connecticut with Kelly Clarkson, then coming to D.C. March 16th, coming to Baltimore March 21st, and then several other shows all over the country. We are very excited for you. Wish you the best. Really appreciate you taking time out of your hectic schedule. And, you know, thank you very much for joining us. Really, really enjoyed it.
Thank you, Joe. You're the best. MoCo forever.
MoCo forever.
And, I hope to see you soon.
Absolutely. Make sure to check out MaggieRose.com. You can follow Maggie on Twitter at IamMaggieRose. All the tour dates, including the two DC ones in Baltimore, are there. Thank you to engineer Mike Valentine and Carolyn Raskauskas, and also intern Sam Merrill. And thank you to listening to MoCo's Most Famous. Until next time.